Welcome to the April IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I am Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director of the IASB, and in this episode, as always, I am joined by Andreas Barco, Chair of the IASB, and Linda Mazan-Hutter, Vice Chair of the IASB. Now, we've just finished our April 2024 board meeting, where we discussed 8 projects. In this episode, we will present 2 projects, intangible assets, and climate-related and other uncertainties in the financial statements. We'll also discuss the recently finalized Interpretations Committee agenda decision on net zero commitments. And we'll talk a little bit about some discussions the IASB had on the prioritization of projects on its work plan and how that relates to the IASB's post-implementation reviews. So let's get started. First, intangible assets. This month was a milestone. The IASB launched a project to comprehensively review the accounting requirements for intangible assets in IAS 38. This is something that the IASB committed to doing in its third agenda consultation. Now, this project recognizes the important role that intangible assets or intangible items play in how entities create value and generate cash flows. And given that IAS 38 is one of our older standards, the project will assess whether the requirements of IAS 38 remain relevant and continue to fairly reflect current business models or whether improvements are needed. During the meeting, the IASB discussed a summary of research that national standard setters and academics had performed on intangibles. The board also discussed initial steps that we plan to undertake as the project progresses. So, Andreas, can I turn things over to you to share some background?
Absolutely. So before I give you a little bit of background, I would like to take the opportunity and thank national standard setters and the academics whose work has provided very useful information for us as we start our project. That research highlighted a range of concerns about the accounting for intangible items applying IAS 38, intangible assets. In particular, concern that financial statements do not provide sufficient information about unrecognized, internally generated intangible assets. However, whilst there is broad agreement among our stakeholders that there is a problem with accounting for intangibles, there are mixed and even opposing views on the best way forward to remedy this concern, and whether the main focus should be to recognize more internally generated intangible assets or to improve the requirements to disclose information about unrecognized internally generated intangible assets. In the initial research and planning phase of the project, we will aim to define the scope of issues to be explored in the project and explore the best approach to plan and organize the work. We need to get a better understanding of how significant and pervasive these issues that have been flagged to us are. During the project scoping, I think we will also need to consider whether the focus should continue to be on financial statement elements only, that is, assets and expenses stemming from intangible items, or whether we should broaden the scope to encompass a wider array of intangible items and associated information. Recognizing the complexity of a comprehensive review of the accounting requirements for intangibles, we will also consider how best to stage work on this topic to produce timely improvements to IFRS accounting standards. And last but not least, the IASB will need to consider the connections between this project and the work of the International Sustainability Standards Board. For example, the IASB will consider connections with some information that IFRS S1 requires companies to disclose and consider connections with the IASB's forthcoming research project on human capital. Over the next few months, the IASB will be consulting with its advisory bodies and other stakeholders to help inform the project plan. These will be discussed at the future meeting, so stay tuned.
Thanks, Andreas. Now, before we move on, for those attentive listeners out there, our so-called gold star listeners, you may recall that the IASB's third agenda consultation included a commitment to not only undertake a project on intangible assets, but also a project on the statement of cash flows. The staff is getting ready to initiate that project very soon, so stay tuned for that. So now let's move on to our second topic today, and that is the accounting for climate-related matters in the financial statements. There are actually several actions that the IASB is taking to help improve the accounting for climate-related matters in the financial statements. And this month, the board discussed 2 items. Linda, could you take us through what happened in the April meeting?
Sure, Neely. I'm really excited, actually, to talk about that. In our April meeting, the IASB decided to publish an exposure draft to obtain stakeholder feedback on draft examples to illustrate how an entity applies IFRS accounting standards to report the effects of climate-related and other uncertainties in its financial statements. The examples would focus on disclosure requirements, and particularly around three areas. First, making materiality judgments in determining whether to disclose information about climate-related and other uncertainties. Second, disclosing information about assumptions and other sources of estimation uncertainty. And third, disaggregating information about assets and liabilities based on their exposure to climate-related and other uncertainties. The examples would be included as illustrative examples accompanying IFRS accounting standards, and as such, would not add or change the requirements in these standards. The ISB decided that the applicable due process steps had been fulfilled and gave permission to begin the balloting process for the exposure draft. The ISB also decided to allow the usual 120-day comment period to ensure that we get adequate stakeholder engagement. So stay tuned for the exposure draft, which we hope to publish in Q3 this year. We look forward to hearing from our stakeholders about whether they agree with that these illustrative examples will help improve the information about climate-related and other uncertainties in the financial statements.
Thanks, Linda. So I mentioned that the board discussed two items related to the reporting of climate-related matters in the financial statements. The first related to the examples that, Linda, you just talked about. Now, the second item relates to the IASB's ratification of an agenda decision from the Interpretations Committee on net zero commitments. So, Linda, could you start off by providing a bit of context on agenda decisions generally? And then, Andreas, could you take us through the technical aspects of the agenda decision?
Sure. So when the committee receives a question, it considers whether there is diversity in practice that could have widespread and material effects. If so, the committee assesses whether the principles and requirements in the standards provide an adequate basis to determine the required accounting. If the committee decides that the standards do not provide an adequate basis, the committee usually recommends that the ISB undertake narrow scope standard setting. Or, if the committee decides that the standards do provide an adequate basis, the committee issues an agenda decision, often with explanatory material that provides additional insights into the principles and requirements in the standards and how they apply to the fact pattern at hand. If the committee decides to issue a draft agenda decision for comment, they are sharing their analysis with stakeholders and then opening up to seek feedback from stakeholders as part of our due process, making sure the entire discussion and their conclusion is very transparent. Any relevant and helpful feedback received is then incorporated into the agenda decision, and that version is tabled with the ISB in a public meeting. The ISB is then asked whether it objects to the agenda decision, and that's what our discussion in this month's board meeting was all about. And I believe, Andreas, you're going to say more about that.
Yes, I will. Thanks, Linda. So if we go a little bit back in time, in 2023, the committee received a submission asking it to clarify how IAS 37 applies to net zero transition commitments. Following this inquiry, in this agenda decision, the committee clarified whether an entity's commitment to reduce or offset its greenhouse gas emissions creates a constructive obligation for the entity, and whether a constructive obligation created by such a commitment meets the criteria in IAS 37 for recognizing a provision. Now, IAS 37 says that an entity would have a constructive obligation if the statement and any other actions the entity takes to affirm its intentions create a valid expectation among those affected, that is, the public at large, that the entity will fulfill its commitment. The committee concluded that whether that will be the case will depend on the facts and circumstances, such as the language used in the statement, the specificity of plans supporting the statement, the timing of the actions required to fulfill the commitment, whether there is publicly available evidence of progress to date, and so on. If the entity concludes that statement has created a constructive obligation, it then considers whether that obligation meets the criteria in IAS 37 for recognizing a provision. And all three criteria in paragraph 14 of IAS 37 must be met for the entity to recognize a provision. The most important one in this context is that the entity, and I quote, has a present obligation, legal or constructive, as a result of a past event. Now, for the fact pattern described in the request, the committee concluded that A, at the time of making the statement, The constructive obligation is not the present obligation as a result of a past event. Just as the enactment of a law is not sufficient to give an entity a present legal obligation, neither stating a commitment nor taking actions that affirm the entity's intention to fulfill that commitment are events that create a present obligation. The entity has to have taken the actions to which the law or commitment applies. B, at any given date, the entity does not have a present obligation to reduce its emissions after that date because the cost of operating with lower emissions in the future will remain costs that need to be incurred to operate in the future. And lastly, only when the entity has emitted the greenhouse gases that it has committed to offset will it have a present obligation to retire the carbon credits required. To summarize, the agenda decision clarifies that to recognize a provision, among other requirements, there must be a past event. That is, the company has emitted gases it has committed to offset. Now, that decision was put before the board in our meeting this week, and we unanimously agreed that it does not change or amend to the existing requirements, so it has now become final.
Great. Thank you, Andreas. So let's move on to the last topic that we wanted to discuss with you today, and it's about the prioritization of the projects on the board's work plan and how that relates to the board's post-implementation reviews. And before we get into PIRs, let me just share a bit of context, if you all can bear with me. So as background, I think everyone's well familiar that the board has many different stakeholders. We have investors, preparers, auditors, regulators, national standard setters, policymakers, and so forth in each of the nearly 150 jurisdictions around the world that use IFRS accounting standards. Each stakeholder may have different priority issues that it would like the IASB to address. And so to address these issues, the board needs to have capacity, and more importantly, so do stakeholders, in order to deal with any changes that come as a result of the board's actions. So even though there may be one group or several groups that may want change, that change will affect everyone. So given the limited capacity around the world, we need to make sure that the board works on those projects that are most impactful and most responsive to stakeholder needs. And in order to figure that out, the board discussed the development of a possible prioritization framework. Now, this prioritization framework is intended to help the board decide which issues to address in between agenda consultations. So as background, the board does an agenda consultation every 5 years, and that's the board's opportunity to holistically consider its priorities based off of stakeholder feedback. So to look at the whole picture and decide what the relative priorities are of various requests for technical projects. But in between those agenda consultations, so in that intervening 5-year period, issues still come up that may need to be addressed. And the board doesn't have the benefit of a holistic prioritization that it gets at the agenda consultation point in time. So it needs a practical approach to make prioritization decisions in between agenda consultations. And the framework that the board discussed is intended to provide that approach and is based on approaches and requirements the board already applies. So really what this framework is doing is just bringing together in a single location what the board already does and provide it in consistent terminology to help facilitate communication. Specific to this draft prioritization framework, we will be seeking feedback from the trustees due process oversight committee, as well as the IFRS advisory committee before we finalize it later this year. Now, as I said, and thank you for bearing with me, I'm providing all of that background because it does connect with what we're doing on our post-implementation reviews. We have two underway, one on IFRS 15 on revenue and one on the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. And one of the reasons that projects come up in between agenda consultations during that intervening 5-year period that I was referring to is because of findings that we become aware of through the post-implementation review process. Based on those findings, the board needs to decide whether an issue is so important and urgent that it needs to start work immediately, or secondly, so important that it cannot wait until the next agenda consultation where it would get that holistic prioritization and the benefits of seeing the big picture, but not so urgent that it needs to start immediately. In that case, the work is added to the IASB's pipeline of inactive projects, but with the intention to start it before the next agenda consultation. Or thirdly, the board may decide, based on the findings in the post-implementation review, that the issue is important but can be deferred to consideration in the next agenda consultation, again, to get the benefit of that holistic assessment of projects and the relative prioritization against other projects from sources outside the PIR. Now, I know that's a lot of background, but Linda, can you walk us through the decisions that were made in the two PIRs and how that relates to what I just introduced with the prioritization?
Thanks, Neely. I think you did the hard work on this one, so I'm very happy to do the easier work in talking about what we discussed this month in the two PIRs. So regarding the PIR of IFRS 15, we discussed feedback received in response to applying IFRS 15 with other IFRS accounting standards, so-called cross-cutting issues. We also talked about consideration payable to a customer, and we talked about whether when there exists a significant financing component. The ISB decided to defer to the next agenda consultation application matters related to consideration payable to a customer and to IFRIC 12 requirements on obligations to maintain or restore service concession infrastructure. The board also decided to confirm that it will consider the matters related to applying IFRS 15 with IFRS 10 and IFRS 11 in the next agenda consultation rather than as part of this PIR. The board decided that with relation to other matters, the characteristics to take action prescribed in the PIR framework are just not present. Regarding the PIR of IFRS 9 impairment, the ISB decided to defer to the next agenda consultation the matters raised by respondents about financial guarantees, to address the matters that arise from the interaction between the impairment requirements and other requirements within IFRS 9, such as those on modification or derecognition as part of its upcoming project on amortized cost measurement. The board decided to take no further action on the other matters at this time that we discussed because the characteristic to take action in the PIR framework are not present. So just to add a little color to that aspect, what that means is to date, we don't have sufficient evidence to warrant any action. Now, if that changes and there is more or different evidence that comes forward, then at that time, we would consider what action needs to take place, as Neely has mentioned. We do expect to finalize discussing the feedback we received in Q2 and to publish feedback statements for both PIRs in Q3 of this year.
Great. Thank you, Linda. So as I had mentioned, we've just highlighted a few of the projects this month. However, if you're interested in hearing about the other projects and digging into some of the discussions in the papers, as well as listening to the board meeting, our website contains all of this information and more. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this month at our IASB's podcast on the April meeting, and we look forward to having you back at next month's episode. Thank you.